Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Philbrook Museum of Art opened a new exhibit over the weekend that examines the transformative property of art in this time of racial reassessment in America. From the Limitations of Now, uses a quote and a speech to his home state by writer Ralph Ellison as an inspiration and prompt to an intergenerational group of artists who, through their work, comment on a society that's been hammered by a pandemic and also reckoning with a long overdue conversation on race. The work spills out of the Helmreich Gallery at the museum, the usual location for special exhibits, to the rotunda and the ground floor of the villa itself, transforming the library to a room revisiting Oklahoma's racial past. The Helmreich Gallery itself turns into an idea lab, featuring a mural by the Black Moon Collective and Faith Ringgold's iconic 1972 print, The United States of Attica, restored to its original intent, a living artwork commemorating those that resist violence in all walks of society. It's also filled with books, conversation spaces, to talk about the art that is in the museum. Many of the artists, both national and local, created work specifically for this show, which is on display through September 5th. I'm joined by Sarah O'Keefe, the Meinig Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at Philbrook, who curated the exhibit. She joins us to talk about the work featured in From the Limitations of Now, now on display at Philbrook Museum. Sarah O'Keefe, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on the new exhibit, From the Limitations of Now, which is really a very different look for the museum as far as a temporary exhibition that's put together by Philbrook. And the inspiration was nominally a speech by Ralph Ellison that he gave back in his home state of Oklahoma, the author of Invisible Man, who said that art allows us to imagine a future where, quote, we are able to free ourselves from the limitations of today, unquote. How much of that quotation shaped this exhibit, the exhibit you collected, the exhibit that you talked to artists about creating, and the physical and visual look of this exhibit, which also breaks the limitations of today, at least for Philbrook, I think?
Yeah, this show started, you know, I am new to Tulsa, and so I moved here right around the time that the pandemic was starting. And working on this exhibition, it started and really was kicked off by a meeting that we had with Koresh Ali-Lenzana, and this was right before the pandemic really came and turned the whole world topsy-turvy and upside down. And it was a meeting we had with him because he was working on a book, which is called Those Who Stayed. And it's a book that explores the history of Tulsa, the history of Oklahoma, really wants to think about Tulsa's history beyond just the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, but to tell various kinds of stories about how so much of the history here is intersectional, so much of the history here is beyond just one year of 1921, but of course it's important to acknowledge what happened here 100 years ago. So when we first started having conversations with Koresh, I was also doing quite a bit of reading about Oklahoma and came across an article in The New Yorker about a trip that Ralph Ellison, one of these incredible authors who throughout his entire life said that he was very proud to be an Oklahoman, even though he had left Oklahoma and had moved to New York City right until, you know, when he passed away, he called himself a proud Oklahoman. And so I was reading this article called Ralph Ellison Goes Home. And in that article, it talks quite a bit about this speech that he gives because a library in Oklahoma City is getting named in his honor. And it is a speech where he talks about Oklahoma's history, how Oklahoma's history intersects with American history, and what exactly is it that art and literature and books, what can they do in allowing us to both look back, really examine the world that we're in, and also look forward very firmly from the conditions of the present, what might yet still be and what we might be able to imagine change. So I worked to track down the speech, which hasn't been published. It was in the Library of Congress. And as somebody who's a bit of a nerd around all of this kind of stuff, I loved finding his handwritten speech. speech and to see the way that he annotated it and the way that it changed over time. And that speech then became a jumping off point for so much of the show. In fact, every time I approach artists about the possibility of being part of the show and so many of the themes of the show about how past, present, and future are interconnected, about how we can imagine change in Oklahoma and across the country, about how and why art is still a powerful and important agent in allowing us to work through the world that we're in. Those are all key themes in this speech. They're all themes that come from Allison. And so I sent the speech to every artist that I was inviting to be part of the show as we started these dialogues about what would make sense to show here in Tulsa at Philbrook this year. And of course, because this last year has been such a strange one, so many of the artists were working through the conditions of this last year in social isolation. Many of the artists in the show had lost grandparents or family members to the COVID-19 pandemic. And so I think we were all in this state of mourning and processing and really asking questions about what is important to us. What do we want to see in the world? Why do we work and do what we do? Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the central questions, and something that's really powerful in Allison's speech, is this idea that art can allow us, art is not what we see what we access in libraries, what we access in museums. These aren't just treasures. They aren't just these things we protect and we put away. They're tools. These are tools that allow us to access the world and to shape the world. And I think that was a really powerful, for me, that was a really powerful idea and one that I think many of the artists in the exhibition were excited about.
Yeah, conduits to our imagination, if you will.
Absolutely.
And how many of the artists use that speech that you sent them as, one way or another, a prompt to create artwork? Do you think some of them actually used it?
Many of them actually used it, yeah. Many of the artists, because they were excited about this prompt for the show, they wanted to make work directly in response to the speech, directly, specifically, especially for Philbrick and for the exhibition. And the artists, many of them have ties to Oklahoma or are based in Tulsa, as well as many who are based across the country, but thinking very much about Ralph Ellison or thinking very much about the conditions of America. And I was excited that, a longtime friend of mine, artist Troy Mitchie, is an artist who's been making work about Ralph Ellison for the last 6 years in a series which is called America is Woven of Many Threads. The title of that series comes directly from Ralph Ellison's book, Invisible Man. And Troy, as somebody who grew up in El Paso, Texas, where there's still to this day different shops that produce zoot suits. And, for folks who at home maybe aren't familiar with zoot suits because they're not as fashionable now as they might have been in a different era, they're these incredible luxurious suits with very exaggerated shoulders and tapered legs. And they were a real symbol of luxury and self-determination and very popular in the 1930s and 1940s.
Right, especially during World War II, the zoot suiters was almost like a uniform, if you will, for the bebop age of modern jazz. And he uses imagery from the zoot suit era and a specific event, the zoot suit riot, which took place during World War II for his piece Shadow and Act. Tell us a little bit about this piece.
For Troy, something that he was really struck by as he was doing more research into the zoot suit, and speaking with many of the tailors and folks who have been making these suits since back in the day, or the tradition has been passed down from generation to generation, he became really interested in history. And the zoot suit riots were an event that happened in 1943. A group of white off-duty servicemen in Los Angeles forced the men that they found who were wearing zoot suits in the streets of Los Angeles to strip. They were beaten. It is important to note that zoot suits were particularly popular among Latinx men, among Black men, among Filipino men. So these men were then, after being beaten, you know, the perpetrators of this violence were not arrested. It was those who had endured the violence who were arrested. In Los Angeles, the Zoot Suit was declared illegal to wear. It was called un-American. And the thing that I learned from working with Troy is this didn't just happen in Los Angeles. This happened across the country. You know, Los Angeles is the most popular instance of this, well-known. So what Troy does in this work is he takes all kinds of strips of material related to the Zoot Suit, related to this history, related to Invisible Man. He cuts it into strips and he weaves it together. So this title, America's Woven of Many Threads, well, the way he's actually making the work is through weaving, it's through sewing. I think his work really allows us to think about how fashion becomes a way of self-fashioning, self-determination, and how this history, you know, connects so much history in the United States around how certain attire, certain people is regulated and by whom, and to think about, you know, what we might want to do moving forward.
Yeah, certainly there was an element of racism in these riots, and it was also a situation where you had servicemen, but the men they were attacking, they couldn't serve as servicemen in the same way as these men were because it was a segregated force. These guys may have been in the military, but they were working on the docks because it was a segregated military in World War II. My guest today is Sarah O'Keefe, the Meinig Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at Philbrook Museum. A new exhibit, From the Limitations of Now, is on display through September 5th at the museum, which breaks boundaries in all sorts of ways. It actually moves into the villa of Philbrook, which I can't remember the last time that's happened for a temporary exhibit at the museum. And, of course, when you first walk in, you see this large green-hued American flag. It's called Untitled Flag for John Lewis, or A Green Screen Placeholder That Is Yet to Be. And it's by a couple of artists. Tell us a little about this piece.
Yeah, this is, in my mind, one of the works that sets the stage for so much in the exhibition. And it is a work that Bethlehem and Adrian made, again, at right after, in 2020. They made it right after John Lewis had passed away. And they made it after his letter to America had just been released, and they had just read it. And I think, like many of us, you know, in this moment in July, we were all thinking about the conditions of this country. You know, there have been and still are, and have long been, I should say, uprising, demanding racial justice. And at that point, these uprisings were becoming much more mainstream. I think they had always been happening, but there was a new kind of groundswell of support for them. And I think, you know, when I've spoken with Bethlehem and Adrian about this piece, you know, I think something that they have said is, and I think we all have felt this over the last year, this question of what is there to hope for? You know, what can we count on? What is it that America stands for? What do we want America to stand for? All of these questions were at the forefront of their minds. And one of the things that came to mind for them was, you know, if John Lewis could see America, an America that is so segregated, an America that was purportedly founded on certain ideals around equity, around justice, around freedom, around the pursuit of happiness for all, and he could both see the contradictions in who is afforded those rights and who is not afforded those rights, but still have hope that America, which was founded as a proposition that this could be a place for all of these values and rights, that he could work for that throughout his entire life and still have hope for those values. Who are they to not have hope for those values and to work towards them? So what I love about the piece is, you know, the title of the piece, A Flag for John Lewis, or A Green Screen Placeholder for an America That Is Yet to Be, really takes this idea of the green screen. You know, many of us have probably worked with green screens before. It's this green backdrop that actors perform in front of. And you perform, and you know that the background is still going to be filled in. It's really just a placeholder for what is yet to come.
And it's a projection of whatever you want it to be.
And it can be, absolutely. Yeah. It can be a projection for so many things. And I think for them, It became this kind of metaphor for what does it mean to work for a set of values that may not all have arrived here in America, but to work against this backdrop that this proposition of a place that can hold all of this may still yet be, and we can perform and act in service of these values in the hopes that they will eventually, you know, all be filled in.
Now, there are multiple works by these artists in the exhibition, but there's another artist who has three very different works in the first room of the Villa Philbook, and that's Lonnie Hawley. He's a beautiful, I mean, really exquisite painting called They Never Saw Our Faces. And then two installations, Weighed Down by the Hose and After the Revival, which is, again, two sort of installation pieces, if you will.
Yeah, Lonnie Hawley is an artist. He's been one of these artists who, you know, in my time working over the last 10 years with contemporary artists, his name comes up again and again and again as one of these heroes and these figures who has inspired so many generations of artists. And so he's somebody who, it was just such an honor and so thrilling to be able to work with Lonnie and to be able to present this work in Tulsa. And this is work made specifically for us here in Tulsa to the NZ this year. Lonnie is an artist who grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, still amid many of the Jim Crow laws. Many of his works are, this is the way he talks about them, are thinking about how to position his work so that we can see the accomplishment and the power and the strength of ancestors who have come before, and in turn, how can we ourselves realize that we are going to become the ancestors for so many who are to come after us, and build a legacy that continues to build on all of the work that has come before. So They Never Saw Our Faces is a piece that is made, what I love about it is so many faces in it. I think the more that you look at it, the more faces reveal themselves to you. There are these silhouettes in kind of gray scale of various faces that are all intersecting and overlapping. And what I love about this piece, you know, he made it knowing that it was coming here to Tulsa. It is also a piece that he finished making on January 5th. So there's a kind of historic, he was working on it in Atlanta, Georgia, which is where his studio is now based. And so, you know, January 6th, the morning of January 6th, is a very significant date in that it's the first date that a Black senator was elected in Georgia. And as we all know, January 6th becomes a very historic date across the country as well, because it is the day that the Capitol was stormed. And I think just knowing the date that that piece was made, you also see in the overlapping faces in all of this, I think you see all of that kind of within the work as well. And so it is such an honor to present that work here. And then the other work that was made specifically for us is a piece that changes every time it is shown. It is that piece titled After the Revival, Vox Humana, The Strength of the Music Lives After the Instruments Are Destroyed. And for Lonnie, you know, he's an artist who really asked for us not to discard objects even after they no longer perform the function that we think they should. He's a really avid environmentalist, and when he sees instruments that no longer, you know, that no longer can play music, that are crushed, that are broken in some way, he still wants to honor those instruments and to use them in his work. So when you come to the museum, it is one of these works that you see first when you enter the villa. And it is a pile of instruments, including an organ that comes here from Oklahoma. it's an organ that no longer plays music. And so for him, you know, this idea of continuing to honor objects even after they no longer serve what we think is their function. We don't just put them in a dumpster, but we tend to them, we care for them, we honor them. That's very important to Lonnie.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, this exhibit spills out into the main ground level of the Villa Philbrook, and you're seeing places where we're not used to seeing new art. For example, the library in the villa has its own little subset exhibit. Tell us a little about this area.
Yeah, the library includes work by one of these incredible artists whose base we're lucky to have based here in Tulsa. His name is Skip Hill. And his works, you know, are really pulling from all kinds of archival sources. He layers imagery and sources together to create these very vibrant and colorful collages, which, you know, it's important to Skip that these are collages that are honoring those who lived in Oklahoma and particularly in Greenwood, and really center on images of life and vibrancy and beauty and joy as a way to kind of counteract so often the way that mass media tells the story of folks who lived in Greenwood, not telling the fuller story, the fullness of life, the fullness of and vibrancy of the businesses, and you know how important that part of the story is. The installation in the library gallery was conceived of by Tri-City Collective, and as I said, you know, the entire exhibition really took its jumping off point from one of the co-founders of Tri-City Collective, Koresh Ali Ramzana, in that in the installation, one of the things that Tri-City really wanted is for us to look at how history is told and who is telling history, and depending on who's telling history, how it is told quite differently. So in that room, what you'll also see are reproductions of newspaper covers. These are newspaper covers that tell ostensibly the same event, the same story. Some of the newspapers are white-owned and some of the newspapers are black-owned. And mm-hmm. over the course of the show, these newspapers are going to change four times. So we're going to change them in about 6 weeks. But what we're starting with is really the beginning of Oklahoma, Oklahoma's statehood. And so when you read these papers, it's fascinating to see just how different the story of statehood is told. The other work that's in that room is music, which is a playlist that Tri-City put together of music by a number of musicians who performed in Greenwood in the 1910s and also in the 1920s. And so when you walk into the room, I think you're immediately grabbed by this music, which, you know, it's always this question, I think, how can we access the past? How can we understand another era? And music has this immediacy in allowing us to feel something, I think, and to feel this other era. So we even have a QR code for anybody who would like to spend more time with the playlist.
It's really interesting, those newspapers, it's about the first day of statehood, and you have mm-hmm. the white-owned press celebrating this. You have the yeah. black-owned press saying, we're really worried about what's going to happen when the state starts making laws for itself instead of being a territory. And in fact, as you know your history, among the first acts of the new Oklahoma legislature was to enact Jim Crow laws.
Yeah.
And there's also a wonderful video piece by Patrick McNicholas, which it's called The Past is Present, which morphs between race massacre images with present-day images, which I found really interesting as well.
Yeah, Patrick is wonderful in that he is allowing us to see the history of sites that we're very familiar with and to understand what happened at that site 100 years ago. And he's very diligently been looking at archival images and then tracking down exactly where that would have been. And it is, it's I think, understanding the history of the ground that you stand on is so important. And there's something so stark about Patrick's imagery that makes it incredibly clear what took place at various sites that I think many of us are familiar with in Tulsa.
I want to ask about one other artist that has a number of works down at the far end of the villa, very near the Renaissance galleries. Some of the artwork has been replaced with images for this show. A number of the paintings are by Arc Minoro Niles, a series mm-hmm. of pink-hued paintings that are very interesting. They're almost interior monologues in the title, and yet there are these little interesting images of, I guess, spirit animals that are in a part of it. Tell us about these paintings.
Arc Minoro Niles is an artist who has really diligently studied the techniques of Italian Renaissance painting, and he's particularly interested in the way that underpainting is often employed in the Italian Renaissance, where there are very vibrant hues of colors that are painted, and then later another layer is painted atop these very vibrant hues, and that lends the colors that you see this other kind of hue that's kind of vibrating just underneath the surface. Something that Arkmenaro is really interested in is what happens when you don't cover up that that kind of vibrant underpainting, but allow it to be left exposed. Many of his works, you know, he's somebody who we are speaking about, Ralph Ellison, many of his works in their titles are all about creating this very fictional space. And so something that I was drawn to for his work as we were thinking about Ellison's speech and the role of fiction in allowing us to provide space for us to move outside of the conditions of today and to imagine this other world that exists alongside our world and one that is filled with all kinds of imaginative elements. This is something that happens very much in Arkmenaro's work, and absolutely the titles are such a big part of the way that that happens in the pieces. So I'll just read, you know, one of the titles is, "I Missed the Boy I Once Had Time to Be. Last night I dreamed I did the things I don't do now." And, you know, depicted in the scene is a bearded figure instead of the places where his beard or his hair would be. There's this very vibrant pink glitter. Mm-hmm. The way that the skin is treated is with gold, and, you know, Arkmenaro looking at Italian Renaissance painting and thinking about gold leaf and the kind of way that luminescence and gold operates in that work. And then there is a kind of strange creature in the corner, as there is in most of his pieces, and he calls these figures the Seekers. And, you know, something he talks about is that all of the figures, the human figures in his works, have this real emotional vulnerability. And you read a lot into that when you especially read the titles of the pieces. But in lurking in all of the corners, there are these strange beak creatures that have this kind of mischievous grin often to them. And they lead to a whole other complicated psychological dimension to the scene, which I think for him, he's somebody who loves literature. And I think every good story or every good book has this kind of complicated play happening where you're trying to understand what's going on and the kind of deep psychology of the scene. And I'll also note that many of the works in the exhibition, because they were made in the last year, they were made amid the pandemic, and many of the artists who are in this exhibition have lost loved ones because of the pandemic. So there's an incredible piece in that room, which is by Arkmenaro, which is of a woman, and that woman is his grandmother, who he painted immediately after she had passed away this last summer. And that's not the only work in the show that is honoring loved ones, family members who have passed away. That's something that happens throughout almost every room. There's an homage to somebody who has passed, and I think an attempt to kind of honor that person's legacy and to think about, you know, from the title of the show, the limitations of now, the questions of today, you know, what can we each do, knowing that so many are no longer with us, to kind of propel their legacy forward.
From the limitations of now on display through September 5th. Sarah, it has been a pleasure to speak with you about this exhibit, and I hope a lot of people come out to Philbrook.
Thank you.
Sarah O'Keefe is the Meineg Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the Philbrook Museum of Art and the curator for From the Limitations of Now, now on display through September 5th at the museum. For information about the exhibit and some of the many special events coming up through the spring and summer, visit philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.